center and coming in is Lube. Milodyke centered it.
Flame bench, there's all kinds of excitement going on there.
Scores! Roll the highlight reel. 6-0 Flames.
Eckers, put it in the wind column.
Yeah, baby, yeah, baby, yeah, baby.
This is Flames Talk with Pat Steinberg and Wes Gilbertson on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
All right, let's get things going this hour on Flames Talk. It is Thursday, April 18th. Wes and Pat from the Scotiabank Saddledome, site of your season finale for the Calgary Flames. They'll play Game 82 Thursday night against the San Jose Sharks. As we welcome you to the Sports Drive, brought to you by Calgary Lock & Safe. Simplify your life with a security ecosystem. Go to CalgaryLockAndSafe.com to request a security audit and get a tailored solution. Hello, Wes.
Hey, buddy.
We've got a busy hour for you, and lots to get into this hour on Flames Talk. And excited to kick it off this hour by saying hello to our goaltending expert, Kevin Woodley's going to wrap up the Flames season between the pipes with us and look ahead to the 2024 Stanley Cup playoffs in net as well. It's time to go inside hockey for Calgary Co-op. This hockey season, support local, find your all-time classics and locally brewed beers. Visit your local Calgary Co-op wine, spirits, beer today. And Kevin Woodley joins us now from In Goal Magazine and NHL.com in Vancouver. Mr. Woodley, I know we couldn't do this last week, so it's good to have you on. How are we doing?
We're good. We're actually gearing up for playoff hockey here in Vancouver. And as you know, it's been a while. As a matter of fact, it's been so bloody long that nobody on this team was a part of this team the last time we actually had a playoff game in Vancouver. Obviously, last time they were in was the bubble. Doesn't really count. Most of them had admitted that. And, like, honestly, it was 2015 against your Calgary Flames.
Yep.
The last time there was a playoff game here in Vancouver. That series obviously didn't last very long. And yeah, like I think Brock Besser was drafted 2 months later, and he's the longest standing sort of member of this team right now. So that tells you just like how raw this group is in terms of playoff experience and how long this city has been waiting to wave their towels again.
Yep, it's terrible towels for Game 1 and 2 for the Canucks and Nashville Predators, which we will get into with you for sure today, Kevin, as we dive in on some of these topics. And you know, before we get into the postseason, wanted to wrap up the year between the pipes for the Calgary Flames. They're going to go Dustin Wolf to wrap up the season. Dustin's going to start the season finale against his hometown San Jose Sharks. And look, it's been a big year for Dustin. He's gotten the most NHL time he's ever seen in his career, and he's been up with the Flames for the last month and a half of the season, and it's been a really good opportunity for him to just be around the team and start to feel more and more like an NHLer. And as we wrap up this season for Dustin and look ahead, I know one of the things that's big for you is just keeping expectations realistic for Dustin going forward here.
I think it's really important. Like, and it's tough to do because he has had such high levels of success at other, you know, at the American League and before that in junior, like just consistently on an annual basis, the best goalie in his league, didn't matter the level. There's a learning process in the NHL, and you have to give him time to sort of figure that out. He turned 23, I guess, just the other day when he was
two days ago.
Vancouver.
Yeah,
exactly. Like, when you look around the league, like, there are guys having impact at young ages. You look at Joel Hofer, his first full season in the league this year, already 23, I believe. And certainly the trend is towards asking goaltenders to have a bigger impact at an earlier age with less AHL experience than they've had in the past. But it's important to remember that's a new trend, and not everybody is going to, you know, be able to jump in with both feet right away. And so this time he's getting right now is incredibly valuable. We've talked about that before. And I think it's important to have patience with it as well. Like, it is not the same. It is not a straight translation. There are lessons being learned every time he's out there. And I think, you know, a summer to sort of apply them, process them, and come back next season, and we'll see what that looks like in terms of where he starts. Just remember that expecting the level of success he had at, you know, in the AHL to translate right away, it just doesn't happen. It rarely happens. And at this age, you have to have a little bit of patience with this young goaltender.
And as you have pointed out many times, you go take a look at different goaltending arcs. I mean, you know, for young goaltenders, it's anything but a linear path, right? It is anything but you just get better every single year and the numbers just keep on getting better until you hit your peak. Very rarely does it go that way.
Well, and even for the ones that sort of do trend somewhat, you know, in a somewhat linear fashion, or I mean, take a look at Thatcher Demko here in Vancouver. You know, he didn't get his first taste. He was still in the American League at this point, at this age. Obviously, NCAA means he stays a little longer in school, but like, he didn't sort of get comfortable in the NHL till more like 25, and now here he is sort of peak of his powers at 28. So, you know, this is a process, like I said, and I think just because of all the success that Dustin has had at other levels, there is a tendency, perhaps, I know there may be, you know, a little worried about that tendency from the outside to expect it to all happen faster at this level because of that, and it just rarely does.
Kevin, I want to switch gears on you a little bit and ask you about Jacob Markstrom. We know Dustin Wolf is going to be between the pipes tonight against the San Jose Sharks, which, you know, barring a surprise, will sort of put a bow on Jacob Markstrom's season. In terms of sort of a season in review, there's been some starts and stops. There's been some injury issues. How do you sort of look at the full body of work here in 23-24 for Jacob Markstrom?
Well, I mean, at the end of the day, with the ups and the downs of the last month, he still finishes fourth in the entire National Hockey League in goals saved above expected. That's a pretty good season. Yeah. And as we talked about many times before, he was lapping the field up until the trade deadline. And talking to not Jacob directly, but when the team was in town, people around him, people close to him from both sides, because don't forget he still has relationships with the Vancouver Canucks. I think the disappointment of how everything went down, it would be foolish to ignore the role that played, as competitive as he is, in sort of the way the numbers fell off a little bit down the stretch. I mean, never mind the fact that you lost your top pairing in terms of Tanev and Hanifin being traded away. Like, that's significant in itself.
Right.
But he's wired so competitive. And to sort of take that away and be in the dog days, to put the work in that is required to play at the level he played up until that point, so at least 5-6 months of a season, and the mental demands of it, the physical demands of it, the how much sort of a grind it is to stay at the level he was at, to build the resume that had him so far ahead of everyone. I mean, don't forget, we're talking like 8 goals, 10 goals better than Connor Hellebuck, you know, around the trade deadline. Like, that's how good Jacob Markstrom was. And then to sort of come to the realization that it's all for nothing. Everybody, like, this is a guy that wants to win. And all your peers, or not all of them, but a good chunk of them, are going to the playoffs. And you're not. And that's tough. I think there's a sort of mental toll that the grind of a season takes. And to get to the end of it and not have that reward that you worked for would only add to that further. So I judge Jacob more on how well he played when things were still in contention, when things mattered and the white flag wasn't up, than I do over the past month. And I would think that most teams are going to as well, if indeed they, you know, he wants to move on and they decide to move on him this summer. The value is still going to be very high, you know, maybe even more so because the contract, when we take a look, I mean, look around the league. You know, Ilya Sorokin's new deal, if I'm top of my head, is $8.5 million a year. And he's not even the starting goaltender for the New York Islanders as they head into the playoffs, as they needed wins down the stretch. It's Semyon Varlamov. So Markstrom at 6, man, I said it ahead of the trade deadline, and I think it applies this summer, despite this last month, becomes a bargain in my mind.
Given the given the injuries, given the uncertainty about, you know, maybe what the future is here in Calgary, any surprise by the report out of Sweden today that he's declined to an invite to World Championships?
No, I hadn't seen that report, but it doesn't really surprise me for all the things I just said. I mean, he is competitive. Yeah. I'm trying to remember, has he won one before, Wes? Like, has he gone over and had that opportunity before? I just think there's probably a lot.
Yeah, he's played in a few. I'll have to check if he's won one. I believe he did win one.
Yeah, so like once you check that box, I'm not sure it means as much, and that's no disrespect to the event itself and I'm certainly it's no disrespect from Jacob Markstrom in terms of, you know, what playing for Sweden means to him. That's a discussion I remember having had in the past. So he's represented his country before. I just think when you look at that grind, when you look at the age, when you look on the mileage on his body and how much he's played this season, even with some of the, you know, missed time, to me, I'm not shocked at all by that decision. And I wouldn't begrudge him, you know, even for a second on that. Like, yeah, Jordan Binnington's going to play for Canada. But you know what? Jordan Binnington needs to show Team Canada that he can be that guy when we finally start having best-on-best competitions again.
Right.
Because he'd be at the top of my list. Jacob Markstrom has nothing to prove in that regard.
Yep. We're chatting with Kevin Woodley of In Goal Magazine and NHL.com. One more on the Flames. And, you know, we talked quite at length about the surgery that Dan Vladar had a few weeks ago when you were on. And you did a really nice job of explaining how important that surgery is for goaltenders, why it's kind of turned into a surgery that a lot of goaltenders end up having. But, you know, Kevin, how would you, knowing that he needed the season-ending surgery and has had the season-ending surgery now, just how would you sum up this year for Dan Vladar, who doesn't get talked about as much these days because he has been on the shelf for as long as he's been?
Yeah, and this is the one I probably should have asked this question when they were in town and people around the team, and I didn't, you know, and I apologize for that. But, you know, how much, my sense, though, is that the need for the surgery tells you that there was a certain degree of playing through it, right? And that you know, if the season wasn't what he hoped it would be. And I think from a consistency standpoint, that's probably fair to say, especially the start. But when you're playing through something like that and you're not playing at 100%, like lower body and goaltenders, that's a really tough ask. I think Dan Vladar is showing what he can do at the NHL level, being able to deliver it consistently as a lot of things change around you. I mean, you know, I talked again about the slow start, but how much of that is not just him, but everyone else around him adjusting to, you know, changes in system. And that's natural. That's not blaming anyone, not coaching staff. Like, that's just sometimes that takes time for everyone to get on the same page. That's part of the process. And so without having talking to him and getting a good feel for, you know, how much of each thing went into it, at the end of the day, like, he didn't have a bad season statistically, especially when you take out the slow start. He really found his level there for a while. And, like, I believe Dan Vladar is an NHL goaltender and perfectly capable of giving you really good sort of 1B minutes. And beyond that, I don't know where the ceiling is, but that's a pretty good floor in the National Hockey League and a pretty good security blanket to have. You know, he's a guy that is showing he's capable of giving you a start every couple of weeks, which is not easy to do mentally. And at times he's shown like he can give you a good couple of weeks. And I think beyond that, the jury's still out. But having that in your back pocket, as long as you sort of are on top of the rehab and know it's going smoothly, and this could be a positive for him in terms of how it frees him up to move and frees up some of the things he might have been dealing with that led to it.
Yeah.
That's a pretty good chip to have on your roster.
Yep. Kevin, let's move to the series that you'll be covering for NHL.com and kind of get into these Western Conference playoff matchups, and specifically between the pipes with you. You're moving on, and thank you very much for wrapping up the year between the pipes for the Flames with us. Kevin Woodley of In Goal Magazine is with us inside hockey on this Thursday. It's Nashville and Vancouver in round one. That is one of the playoff matchups out west that is locked in, and it's Thatcher Demko and UC Saros, one of the sexiest goaltending matchups of round one as well. Set us up for it. What jumps off the page as you get set to dive in on this series?
Well, I mean, for a lot of people, I think the first thing that jumps off the page is, hey, Thatcher Demko's been out for 4 to 5 weeks and he just got back, and is he going to be up to game speed? And in talking to him this week, really, he wasn't worried about it. In terms of, you know, getting a couple of games under his belt and feeling like he had that rhythm, had that timing, had those reads down pat. He looked pretty good against Calgary, a couple of great saves, you know, the backdoor on Pospisil, the top of the crease on Kadri. I think they generated 3.1 and expected by clear sight models and only got the one off a deflection from the point. Yeah, there were some times where he got caught on the wrong side of the screen or maybe looking the wrong way in a play behind the net. And those are things he'll look to continue to iron out. But on that side of the ledger, not really worried about Thatcher Demko. I've said it before when he was during the injury. Came into the season, you don't play all summer, you get two starts in the preseason, and he was the best goalie in the league by a huge margin for the first 6 weeks of this regular season. That's what they're hoping for from him. Saros, really interesting. This is not, and he's one of those guys that for the past two, he'd done it enough at the end of last season that I had him in my quote-unquote elite category. I thought he'd done it year over year, just enough to sort of say that this is who he was. And then this year, adjusted save percentage is barely above expected at this point. He's 44th in the NHL out of 72 goalies, numbers that we are not used to seeing from UC Saros. And again, new coach, adjustments, a team that took a while to sort of get used to how they wanted to play, a team that, frankly, the underlying numbers, even during their sort of post-February 1st win streak where they've been one of the better teams in the NHL, the underlying numbers defensively are still not great. And so they do ask more of him than perhaps they did in the past. But he's capable of better than he's shown all season. I think if you're Nashville, you're kind of looking at it like Dallas is with Jake Oettinger. Like, let's hope we get the Jake Oettinger that we've gotten in the last two or three weeks, as opposed to the one that for the season is actually right there with UC Saros, just hovering around expected and way below where I think everyone expects him to be on an annual basis. Hasn't been a great year. There's no doubt about it. But we all know how capable they are of sort of getting to another level. We just haven't seen it as consistently out of Saros. Doesn't mean I'd bet against it, but at least on paper heading into this one, the advantage would be, you know, would be in Vancouver's side on the goaltending matchup.
And what about the series itself? I mean, you talked off the top about the inexperience that exists playoff-wise on this Canucks team. How do you just handicap the overall series itself, knowing you've been watching that Canucks team all year long?
Well, I mean, it's going to be whoever can get to their style and dictate style, I think, is going to matter in this one. And, you know, we won't have the answers and what type of adjustments need to be made until we see them play. But Vancouver is a team that, you know, a lot of talk about the improvements defensively under Rick Tocchet, and they're all warranted. You know, third best team, 5-on-5 in terms of high danger chances against. They do not give up much, especially on the rush. And Nashville, one of the adjustments they've made this season is how they get out of their own end. Like, instead of Roman Josi carrying the puck out, they want quick passes and quick transition. If you can get that against the Canucks and against their forecheck, you can open them up, especially if you can. We saw a couple teams this year really get it through the middle and across to the weak side and create rush chances against the Canucks that were uncharacteristic. And so it's sort of their strengths are sort of opposite each other, and Vancouver's ability to sort of spend more time. They defend by not defending. They defend by spending more time in the offensive zone. They don't turn pucks over. They will not make a risky play into the middle, even when they're on the forecheck and cycling down low. They'll just put it back behind the net and reset and work it up to the point. Like, it's not sexy, but it's had teeth. And in some ways they defend by not being in their own end. And Nashville's ability to sort of counter that exact thing is one of their strengths. So I'm kind of fascinated, frankly, to see who's able to dictate the style of game better. Can Nashville break out against that forecheck and get through the neutral zone with speed and create the odd man rushes that Vancouver hasn't given up all season? Or can the Canucks sort of dictate and keep them in their own end and, you know, sort of create what they did in the first three times these teams met, which was all sort of one-sided in favor of Vancouver? But again, that was before Nashville sort of really got to their identity in terms of how they played. So we don't have answers here. But that sort of chess match in styles could be fascinating to watch. And, you know, the fact that Vancouver doesn't have a lot of guys who have been here before makes you wonder if, you know, some of that inexperience could come out in terms of, you know, not sticking with your systems, not sticking with your game plan, allowing the moment and the noise around you to be too much. I don't know if it's going to happen, but certainly a lack of experience makes you wonder if it could.
Kevin, awesome stuff as always. I got one more for you before we let you go. Of the other first round series in the Stanley Cup playoffs, I guess of the ones we know are set or maybe that we're predicting will happen from a goaltending standpoint, is there one that you're really intrigued by? Is there one that you're going to keep really close tabs on because of what the between the pipes battle might be?
Got to be Winnipeg, Colorado.
Yeah.
Right? Like, you've got two-time Vezina Trophy winner in Connor Hellebuck, sort of peak of his powers right now, against Alexander Georgiev, who I fully believe is the number one goaltender. But when we talk about guys that haven't had the seasons we expect, he did last year. I covered his series against Seattle. I know it was a disappointing first-round exit for him and the Colorado Avalanche, but that was not on Georgiev. That was not on him at all. I thought he gave them exactly what they needed, and it just wasn't enough for other reasons in that series. He hasn't given them that level at all this year. I feel like they played the wheels off him early, and they just were never able to get him back to how well he played last year. That continues right now. And so the fascinating part to me is they've got a backup now in Eustace Annanen, who they appear to trust, whose adjusted save percentage, albeit in a tiny sample, but, you know, 362 chances against, favorable environment, and this is what I don't understand. They played him only against sort of, you know, I'll say the easier outs, but they managed his starts. Plus 1.7% adjusted save percentage is six in the National Hockey League. Again, tiny sample. But I would have thought, given where Georgiev is, which is minus 0.6, 57th in the NHL, that they might have wanted to get, like, not only just to rest Georgiev, but they might have wanted to give Annanen a few more starts against some tougher opponents to maybe see a little more what they have. Because if it keeps going the way it has gone so far, they might need him, especially when the guy at the other end is Connor Hellebuck. And yet, despite all that, last one, it hasn't happened in the playoffs for Hellebuck. Part of that is the team in front of him, but part of it is that's where your game gets broken down the most. Connor Hellebuck is the best goalie in the world in straight lines, one-on-one, no questions asked, has been for a long time. If you can go east-west on him and create lateral plays across the middle, he's still great. But relative to everything else he does, like, I hate to even use the word weakness. It's relative weakness because he's so good at everything else. If you go east-west and create those types of opportunities, he gets a lot closer to league average. And so I think Vegas absolutely targeted that last year. Can the Avs create enough of that to offset what is clearly an advantage in goal otherwise for the Winnipeg Jets?
That recent Georgiev stat line is terrifying if you're the Avs, isn't it?
It is, because, and listen, like, I'm a Georgiev guy. I always thought in New York with the Rangers that he could be a number one. I've always believed that, and I've sort of backed that, and there was some pushback on that, and so I felt good about the way he played last year. And he started really good this year. It just felt like they just kept going to him, and it just, like I said, it feels, and we're months and months later, so is what they did in the first month and a half of the season, should it still be relevant? No, but it just feels like they sort of played him down, played like I said, the wheels off him, and hasn't ever sort of gotten back. It looks like there's tension in his game. The way he sort of had his hands way out against him, like, they don't look natural and relaxed at times. He just doesn't look as confident, and it's such a cliche, but it's something that could change a series in a hurry. And we know where the Colorado Avalanche are, but to hear your number one goalie is that far down the league rankings in adjusted numbers, you're right. That's a little bit worrisome.
Kevin, as always, appreciate the time. Hey, thank you so much for hanging out with us, setting things up, and wrapping up the season for the Flames in net. We'll do it again next week, and we'll have plenty of observations on round one of the playoffs when we chat in a week's time. Hey, so enjoy game one and two of the Canucks and Predators, and we'll talk to you next week.
Yeah, we'll absolutely, guys. And any storylines develop involving goaltending, I'm just a phone call away.
Awesome, man. Will do. And we will keep that in mind as Kevin Woodley joins us from In Goal Magazine and NHL.com. And he joins us inside hockey on this Thursday edition of Flames Talk Inside Hockey for Calgary Co-op. Let's go local, Calgary, from best from the West, Canadian produce to quality only Alberta meats. Find your local at Calgary Co-op. Shop online or in store today.
Talking your team right now. Flames Talk is on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Game 82 here at the Dome on this Thursday night as we continue along. It's Pat and Wes from the Scotiabank Saddledome. And
chance for the Flames to finish the season with a win, Wes, and with a solid performance in front of their home crowd. I just want to play you this. This was from Ryan Huska on the Coach's Show. Every home game, Ryan joins us for a little exclusive interview on our Flames warm-up pregame show. And I asked him about, you know, do you get the sense that your group is mindset-wise in a spot where they're ready to finish the season strong and they're ready to have a you know, have a good effort in front of their home crowd in Game 82, even though the playoffs aren't coming afterwards? I thought it was a really interesting comment from the head coach, and just interesting in terms of what he's looking for from his group tonight.
It matters. I mean, we talked in the media availability about your first impression, your last impression. And this is their last impression that they can leave with people tonight, leave with their teammates, leave with the staff that's been around them all year and that has evaluated them all year. And almost as importantly is the people around that are going to be watching the game tonight, because that goes to a person's integrity a little bit and it speaks of their character. So I want to see us come out and play this game like it really matters, like there's something on the line. And that would be the best thing for me. In regards to how I want our team to finish the season.
So, goes back to something that he said when he spoke with us after morning skate on Thursday as well, and that is, hey, it's an opportunity. It's important to start strong, but important to finish strong. And I think you got the sense from inside the locker room today that, look, nobody's happy that this is the final game of the year. Nobody's happy that they're not going to the playoffs, and everybody's disappointed in how this season has gone, but there's still a value and an impetus to go out there, and in front of your home crowd especially, put a good effort on the ice and finish this season with something that Flames fans can feel good about in terms of an effort.
Yeah, and I was really, you know, I was really intrigued by that answer. It really piqued my interest about leaving a lasting impression. And, you know, so often what you hear from Ryan Huska and his media availability dovetails with what he's told the group in their morning meeting. We know that to be the case. And, you know, I think it's a really good way to look at it. You know, if you lay an egg, and especially lay an egg against a poor opponent in your final home game of the season, I do think that leaves a sour taste that can sort of span through the summer. And Ryan's talking about it more on an individual basis. You know, if you're Connor Zary or Martin Pospisil or Yegor Sharangovich or up and down the list, you know, leave a positive last impression for these few months before anyone's going to see you on NHL ice again. But, you know, I look at it from a team standpoint as well. You know, how much mileage, if that's the right word for it, did the Flames get out of Dustin Wolf's strong performance in Game 82 last year? You know, how much encouragement did that provide for the fan base? How excited were people to see Matt Coronato make his Flames debut at the end of the year? We're not going to see debuts tonight, so it's not the exact same as the Wolf and Coronado situation, but you can leave an impression that is what we'll be talking about on this station for the next few months. It's what fans, as they, you know, sit on their decks through the summer and drink a beer, are going to be talking, well, remember how great, you know, so-and-so looked at the end of the season. Man, if he could keep that up, what, you know, how important would that be? I even go back and, you know, I laugh about it now because of what it did contractually for him, but even go back to when Mark Jankowski scored 4 in the final game of the season, right? You can bet on patios and decks across Calgary. A lot of people were talking that summer about, well, geez, what, you know, Mark Jankowski just got to 20 goals and he had that 4-point or 4-goal night.
4-goal night.
Right? Like, forgot about what, that. What could that do for the young man and for the organization? And so, you know, I thought it was a great point by Ryan Huska. I do think there's some validity to that.
And then there is the whole idea of those individual milestones. Last call for 30 goals. Blake Coleman will be back in the lineup after missing 4 with an upper body injury. So great to see Blake back. He'll return to the lineup, have an opportunity to hit 30 goals for the first time in his NHL career, which he admitted to us on Thursday morning that, you know, it would mean something to him. Like, this is something that would end up being meaningful to him. You've got Nazem Kadri a goal away from his third 30-goal season and first since being a member of the Toronto Maple Leafs. You've got Mackenzie Weegar a goal away from being the first person ever, credit to Wes Gilbertson, first player ever to score 20 goals and record 200 block shots in the same season. Well, you know, there were others telling that to players like it was their stat. That was a Wes Gilbertson stat, so I always need to...
That's a Wes Gilbertson special.
I need to make sure that Flames Talk fam always gets their love. And Mackenzie Weegar is also one goal away from setting a Flames record of even strength goals in a season for a defenseman with 17. So there's four milestones right there that, you know, I think mean something. And there's something to motivate you going into this game. It's not... hey, we need a win to make the playoffs, or it's not we need a win to win the division, or we're ramping up to play game one against our first round opponent. It's not that, but it's something, and little things are still important at this time of year, and I'm curious to see how the rest of the team goes about trying to ensure the best they can that those milestones get hit tonight.
Yeah, and those little things, you know, give the head coach something to sort of grab onto and use to motivate his group. It gives the veteran players something to use to motivate the group. And, you know, I don't think the Calgary Flames should necessarily lack motivation tonight in their final chance to sort of thank their home fans for sticking with them through what's been a trying season at times. But those little things go a long way. And I promise you this, the loudest roar that you'll hear tonight at the Saddle Dome will be on a Kadri or Coleman or Weegar goal, because I do believe that these things mean something to a lot of fans as well. I do think that gives them a rooting interest as they make the drive to the Saddle Dome tonight. They'd love to see, and especially in those three cases, you know, we're talking about guys who, you know, we're not talking about a perennial 40-goal scorer that we're talking about, hey, wouldn't it be cool to see him get to 20? Like, we're talking about, for Weegar and Coleman, what will be a high watermark in their career. We're talking for Kadri about a mark that he's admitted means something to him, and he hasn't done, I believe, since 17-18. Yep. And so, like, we're not talking about freebie milestones, and I think for the fans that can mean something to them as well.
Yeah, and you know, the Weegar one is really cool. That's a first time ever. The Coleman one is really neat because of how important he is in all facets of the game, rather, for the Flames, and just how much of a leader he's been. And it's a cool story. A guy's 32 and has had to scratch and fight and claw to be in this league. And to stay in this league, and here he is a goal away from getting to 30. There's just some really cool angles, and that's not a knock on Kadri. It'd be neat to see him get to 30 as well, because he's been such an important player on this team this year.
Absolutely, and that you know, gives you reason to root for these milestones, because these are three guys who have been key cogs and will continue in my eyes to be for the Calgary Flames.
Think they happen? Think we get all three of them tonight?
I don't think we get all three. I hope we get two, but I don't. Now, it is the San Jose Sharks, but we know the Flames have had their
it's true.
Their cellar dweller issues.
Well, there are still things to watch going into Game 82 for the Flames, and then following Game 82, it's Friday's locker cleanout here at the Scotiabank Saddle Dome. We'll have wall-to-wall coverage of that for you on Sportsnet 960 The Fan, and of course, wall-to-wall coverage on Flames Talk on Friday for Locker Cleanout Day 2024. As we start to wrap up this hour, thanks to Cam and Shan, our producers. Wes Gilbertson's on Twitter at Wes Gilbertson, and this has been the Sports Drive, brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. Simplify your life with a security ecosystem. Go to CalgaryLockAndSafe.com to request a security audit and get a tailored solution.